What up, Primers? JC here. Can't get enough of Footy Prime the podcast? Why not head over to Footy Prime's YouTube? Head to youtube.com/footyprime for exclusive video content. Then make your way over to wearefootyprime.com for all things Footy Prime, including our official gear from Admiral and our One Ball Gin from Nickel 9 Distillery. And make sure to follow and subscribe across all platforms, from Twitter to Instagram to Facebook to TikTok. Footy Prime has got you covered for all things footy. Thanks so much for listening, and back to the show.
Oi, the boys and girls on Footy Prime on occasion are known to use vulgarities and frankly appalling language, and sometimes the tales can get quite adult in nature, so keep the volume down if there are kiddies around, and thank you for listening.
Oh, let's go!
Booty, booty,
it's time to get this party started. It's time to get this party started with Danny, Jimmy, Gregor, Andy, Jimmy, JC. All we know and all we talk about is booty, booty. It's time to get this party started tonight.
You're listening to FP Presents CF Montreal Three Questions. Footy Prime, your almost daily footy fix.
Perfect. As we press record. Okay, welcome everybody into CF Montreal Three Questions. We are Thursday, August 1st, for a little bit of context, which is a strange day for us to be recording. It has to be said, Ollie, we usually do this business on a Tuesday after a weekend of MLS or league play, occasionally a little bit later in the week if there's a midweek matchup. But it's League's Cup, and I have to admit, I'm firmly in Olympic mode. And I absolutely, once I was informed that I would not be able to fulfill my duties as sideline reporter at Stade Saputo on Tuesday, I just returned from Toronto, and I was happy to stay at home and watch this contest. But I had to manufacture a little bit of excitement to get up for this contest, given that they'd fallen to Orlando City 4-1 in the opening round of League's Cup. But this team, I mean, is the League's Cup, perhaps, even after they've been eliminated from Canadian championships, is this maybe a lifeline for them?
I'll be able to answer that on Monday morning after San Luis play Orlando, because the main thing was to keep yourself alive. First of all, I'm surprised I wasn't replaced for this week's show. I thought you were going to ask Luan Schlitt, who is Laurent Coteau's assistant. He's in charge of all the drones for training sessions with CF Montreal. Like, I thought you'd do a half hour special with him.
Okay. I'm Amy Walsh, and this is Ollie Brad. I forgot to say that on the way in. And Ollie, I should have expected that you would go this direction, but I am so goddamn sick of talking about drones. But he would have been a fabulous guest. Maybe I should just press end record and this could be it for today, and I'll reach out to him.
There you go. All the best, Luan. No, but to come
well
back.
Well played by you.
To come back to the match, I think it could be, even if your League's Cup ends in, well, is essentially finished.
Yeah.
The manner in which they won that game, they should have never been that vulnerable at the end of the match. I think it should have been dead and buried. Mentally, there's still something very fragile to close out halves and games, because you also feel that before you go into the dressing rooms at halftime, there's always that 5-minute gap where you're wondering, is it going to fall apart? Did the work you did over 40 minutes, will it collapse, or will you be able to just stay safe? So that's a big question mark. But the football itself was so much better. The energy compared to the match against Toronto, where there was a bit of getting stuck in, yes, but you felt it was more out of anger than out of determination, because Toronto had just trampled all over CF Montreal in their first MLS encounter at BMO Field. So yeah, there's an awful lot of positives in that match on Tuesday.
Yeah, I think when people put that to you, they say, I've got good news and I've got bad news. Which do you want first? So what type of person are you? What news do you prefer to have first?
Bad news. Always finish on a high.
I agree. So then let's dig into that a little bit, because I was going to start off with the positive, because I think overwhelmingly that's what this matchup was collectively for this team. But you're right about closing out the first half, managing stoppage time, closing out the game, killing a game. Mm-hmm. It seems to be very difficult for this team to really get a handle on. And in terms of performances, wasn't his best and conceded two penalties, and that's Joel Waterman. So what did you think about Waterman? And I think also maybe the leadership piece, as it were, that he's the one that's conceding those penalties.
My concern is not so much the penalties. Is it an issue that you concede two in the same game, that you see stuff that you saw maybe 2 or 3 years back from Joel Waterman? I don't feel we've seen that side of him much in the last year and a half. Is it concerning? Yeah, because you're just giving a free pass in a tournament where 3 points is not the only thing. The goal differential can be huge. And that's why I think Montreal are in trouble ahead of San Luis's visit to Orlando. I have more of a concern with the end of the game where Waterman, something happens on the pitch. It's happened to any player. You lose your head or you make a mistake. If you kind of swipe it aside and go, okay, I'm refocusing, I don't have really any sort of an issue with that. The issue with Joel Waterman is that, and I'm going really macro here, he wants a new contract next year. I think he deserves it. He's got an option for 2025, but I was talking to him on the radio the other week, and he was saying nobody likes going into an option year, just going into that year itself without knowing what's going to happen beyond. So I'm looking to get something more substantial. 100% legit, and I do believe deserved. Having said that, when you're a veteran defender in such a key position, like the Rudy Camachos were in the past, your impact on the pitch and on the team has to go way beyond what you do as a footballer. You have to be there for Alvarez. You have to be there for Campbell. Corbo is maybe a different kettle of fish, but you have to be an example of how to show up for kids who you're bringing along, because your philosophy is not like Victor Wanyama. There's a reason why he's an alien in that team, because he doesn't represent what kind of squad you want to build. But you need those players. You need them if they're able to have added value beyond their own footballing abilities. That's where I'd like to see Joel Waterman just gather everyone at the end of that match, calm everybody down instead of throwing oil on the fire, getting upset with the referee, getting upset with the opposition. So I'm still a fan of Joel Waterman. I think I'm not sure, apart from Mathieu Chouinard, anybody's progressed as much over a 2 or 3 year span with CF Montreal than Joel Waterman. But in those moments, I'd like to see a different type of leadership, and I'd like to see it for him personally, because I think that's a huge key of him getting or not getting what he wants at CF Montreal.
I like what you said about that, because I mentioned the leadership piece, but you dug into it. But now, thanks to your mention of Victor Wanyama as an alien, I have the police in my head on a loop. But we can talk about that later. But I think, you know, you look at, you know, how fiery he was. I think he was a little bit unhinged, and Chouinard was also like that. And like, so two hugely, like massively important pieces of that team, in terms of play, but also in terms of leadership and wearing the armband, before Saliba is subbed and Piet comes in, you have to be able to contain that, to tamp that down a little bit, as you said, so that you're able to control the group, to make sure that they're more measured in their approach and they can see the game out. And then the second penalty especially. Yes, maybe it was a little bit soft, but he's got the player within control. You don't need to at all. The Sosa header was poor. You don't need Lasser to be playing it back into his own 18 at that point. There was the preamble to the decision.
Yep.
But that was just, you as a defender, you have the player within full control, their back is to goal. There's no need to dive in there. And that's of concern to me. And it makes me think, as a player, when I was within the national team and I would come back to my club setup, you came back and you were reinvigorated and you were renewed and you understood kind of what you needed to do on your own player arc in order to improve. And sometimes that can result in frustration. You think that you come back in and everything's going to be all light and it's going to be easy to navigate. But sometimes it's not. Sometimes there's a little bit of a time period that you have to navigate as a player where you're able to reconcile the two environments.
Yeah, and I'd even go a bit further. And now I'm just asking the question because I don't know what's happening behind closed doors or on the training pitch in the dressing room. Sunusi Ibrahim was sent in the stands for two matches because the coach wasn't happy with him for some reason. He's the best scorer. Matias Kokoro goes off, storming off at training, and he's brought back. He was sent to the stands as well for a few games, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. You're saying that Mathieu Choignat looks a bit annoyed, or Joel Waterman is the same. I have no idea. Maybe they're all completely isolated cases, or maybe there's just a bit of tension in that group for some reason. Maybe they're all different reasons. Maybe some are contract-driven, others game-time-driven. As I said, I haven't got a clue, but when you put Choignard in the mix as well, and I didn't sense it that much, but yeah, there can be a, he has that side to him, right? He, yes. he gets up for it. We saw it a lot, 2 years ago, but maybe there is, and maybe there's a man management kind of learning curve for Laurent Courtois as well, because I was having a conversation with a colleague at RDS at the weekend, and I was saying that if you're not happy with a player, Sunusi Ibrahim, for example, on one hand, I admire the fact that you decide to put him in the stands because you're just sending a really clear message, not only to the guy, but to the squad as well.
And you're being consistent, having done it already with Matias Kokoro.
Fair enough. But Matias Kokoro is not your top scorer. And it's...
Yeah. I'm
just thinking about... How, and I'm very principle driven. So I love to see a guy being told, no, that's not acceptable. Having said that, I've never been a first team football manager where, contrary to MLS Next Pro, you're judged on how many points you have at the end of the year. So, you know, I don't think it's a conversation for now. I don't think it's a conversation for a presser, just quick before or after a game, but I'd be curious at the end of the season to know, Laurent Courtois, would you manage things a bit differently? Would you set expectations more clearly at the beginning? I don't think that was a fault of his, because I was in Orlando for training camp and everything looked really, really clear and everyone looked like they were on the same page. But in terms of behavior, is there something there that needs to be tweaked? I don't know. It's a really interesting conversation.
As a principle-driven guy and a parent to a young daughter, do you also appreciate Laurent Courtois and his consistency and kind of coming down hard on guys when it's necessary?
Yeah, I appreciate his consistency of what we see in terms of treatment from one guy to the next. One thing that has me scratching my head, and again, I'm going really macro now in terms of telling CF Montreal's story to as big of a public or an audience as possible. He's really hard to follow in terms of comments made in the media and then what happens on the pitch. And now I'm talking about starting 11 decisions or game time. Seeing Tom Pierce and Bugay starting at the weekend when, 10 days ago we were talking about long-term projects and guys
right,
who were...
getting them up to fitness.
Yeah, and I believe the words were they're really far off. And... of course, the plan was never to have them on the pitch for 90 minutes, but I find that extremely confusing. And there have been a lot of moments like that. Is everybody available? Yes. Sunusi Ibrahim is in the stands. Is so-and-so fit to play? Yes. He doesn't make the trip, or the opposite. I'm really not sure. It's always, you feel you're in a cryptic clue constantly trying to figure out who's going to be available, who's going to be used or not. And it makes it extremely hard to understand what's driving these decisions. And it makes it really hard to tell the story because you're telling people, I was the one doing that on the radio 10 days ago. Tom Pierce, forget it. Really interesting signing. But you'll see him in the League's Cup final, if anything, based on what we're being told, or on August 24th when they come back from League's Cup. But forget about him. Don't get excited now. And all of a sudden he comes up. And what a fantastic decision to have him play. Like he was outstanding in that match. But why is he playing based on what you said 10 days ago? And that, I'd say, is my only frustration with Laurent Courtois since he came. It's either that you're intentionally telling us A, knowing that B is going to happen, either you're just changing your mind completely, or it's improvisation. But it's like, it has to be one of those three. And I don't really understand why, because when you speak to him one-on-one, things look so clear. And then mm-hmm. when he's talking to the media and you see who's actually playing or not and what happens or doesn't, it gets really confusing.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because you're right. The man himself, to speak with him, to hear him in press conferences, he's a straight shooter. Doesn't mince words. It's very much what you see is what you're going to get. But then there's a disconnect with what ensues and what's happening on the pitch and those decisions. But Courtois said himself, we didn't change anything. We talked about the same things, didn't make adjustments. And we've taken our medicine now that we've talked very much. I mean, you'd be amazed that CF Montreal listener won that match. It was a 3-2 victory at Stade Saputo, and warm night, but very enthusiastic, supportive crowd.
Wow.
But that's the bad news. But now the good news, and you alluded to it in Tom Pierce. Wow. Was that the best debut, Ollie, in club history? Do you think it rivals perhaps the best debut in club history? You're like, no.
Drogba with a hat trick against Chicago. Oh.
Okay. Drogba aside, Ollie, I'm going to reframe my question.
I, in terms of expectations, 100%.
Yeah.
I mean, that was, and it wasn't just the goal, great. The pass, for me, even better.
I saw your tweet.
But honestly, find me five better final passes in the history of the club in MLS. I just don't see. And let's be honest, there's never been an incredible, crafty number 10 at CF Montreal. Like, mm-hmm. I remember, I believe it was in the playoffs against Toronto, Patrice Bernier gives a through ball on the right at the Olympic Stadium against the TFC. Like, that was a great pass and nobody saw it coming. But I really have to kind of dig in there to the memory box to figure out what can rival that kind of pass. And you're not used to seeing CF Montreal with quality crosses either. So
no, I think you have to go back. Like, I mean, obviously your tenure with the club and covering the club has much more depth than mine, much more history. So, and much more knowledge, but I started in the pandemic year and I think you'd have to go back to Alistair Johnston and the way that he could serve in a ball. And obviously I think his service and his quality of delivery has improved since he was with CF Montreal, since he's been to Celtic, and what he's bringing to the national team. But I think to see consistency of delivery, you would probably have to go back to Alistair Johnston, and that was not the left side. And as also you layer that in as a caveat, right?
Well, on the left side, you've had Piatti cutting in to his right foot. You had Lapalainen, who's far from a good crosser. So, no, it was really interesting seeing him play. And beyond those two goals where he contributed, I remember there's one ball that's played, I believe, from Sirois. He's in a really tight spot, halfway line, hardly any room because he's got the byline just or the sideline just beside him. And he pulls an incredible touch, takes it down. His first touches were amazing. Mm-hmm. Yet he really showed us he's an incredible and very typical left-footed player, because he offered the most amazing passages of play. And he offered the most disastrous pass as well in that game. It was his right-footed pass on the halfway line. I don't know what that was. It was a very right-footed pass from a left-footed player. And you know what? That makes me feel just a tiny bit better about myself, because it shows that even the craftiest players can have a really wayward pass. Let's call it that.
What up, Primers? JC here. Can't get enough of Footy Prime, the podcast? Why not head over to Footy Prime's YouTube? Head to youtube.com/footyprime for exclusive video content. Then make your way over to wearefootyprime.com for all things Footy Prime, including our official gear from Admiral and our One Ball Gin from Nickel 9 Distillery. And make sure to follow and subscribe across all platforms, from Twitter to Instagram to Facebook to TikTok. Footy Prime has got you covered for all things footy. Thanks so much for listening, and back to the show.
So maybe that's what this CF Montreal Three Questions episode is. It's the good and the bad. It's the yin and the yang. And even in a very impressive debut by Tom Pierce, you also have kind of a shambolic past, just to remind everybody that he is, in fact, human.
Well, I don't think I'll take that any day of the week if it means that we'll see that kind of player. Now, I think, again, coming back to what I was speaking about earlier on in terms of expectations and telling the story of, do you expect him to start every match now? I think that's a I was very concerned when I saw him on the starting lineup. Same thing for Bugay on the other side. It was 34 degrees, I believe, at kickoff. You're playing those guys in the most demanding spots on the pitch in Laurent Courtois' system. Mm-hmm. They hadn't, I think for Pierce, he hadn't started a match since April. I mean, it was asking a lot. So I was very concerned for injuries, because if these guys get injured, and now you're starting this scenario that you experienced for 2 or 3 months at the beginning of the year with newcomers who are supposed to do the opposite. They're supposed to breathe in a new bit of a life into that squad. So I was concerned for that. And I still would be if they go beyond the group stage and you keep using him. But if you're choosing your moments, if you're making sure that you don't pull on the elastic too much, well, it's very interesting. And it's interesting a lot faster than I expected.
Maybe that's the answer for Laurent Courtois there, or that's a way that he manages his squad, where you have a performance like that, which just screams, I'm going to grab this spot and make it my own because of this performance when I'm inserted. But from a man management perspective, you can't have him start the next match. And then that gives Courtois a little bit of wiggle room in the way that he puts out his next starting 11.
Yeah, well, that's going to be the big, because now he'll have decisions to make and he's got a much fuller squad than he had 2 or 3 months ago. So you have to manage those who aren't playing. You have to, if you go to the knockout round, I mean, you're not there just to fine tune stuff. I think CF Montreal needs more than fine tuning, but you understand what I mean. You're not testing out and you're not in a lab. You're there to pick up the points because you're going along in the competition and you've got money attached to that as well. So from a club, from a Gabriel Gervais perspective, and especially the players, it factors into play. So it's going to be really, really interesting to see if, obviously, they go through after that match on Sunday.
Right. So I was going to mention that. So we'll wait and see how they progress, or if they progress in League's Cup. But Ollie Brett, RDS play-by-play man and host of FC 9-9. So as a reminder, listener, go check that out for really in-depth interviews that Ollie does in English and in French for the best soccer minds in this country and beyond. Was there anything else that you wanted to add, Ollie?
Just very interesting to see Joseph Martinez. I think we're starting to see what having him on the pitch can do in bringing other guys into the mix. We spoke very early in the season. It was Yankov, Kokoro, and Martinez who played together. And you just felt everything was off, but you also felt there was an awful lot of thinking about the other guy in Martinez's play. And I love when he lets the ball go through his feet and he just has a spin-off run. And because you know that if that works out, well, then you're in. And not only are you in that passage of play, but you're making it extremely confusing for the back line for the next one, because now they're doubting. They don't know what to expect. So I find that really interesting. Having said that, I think Kokoro needs to understand how to play in that kind of, we're spinning off one another, I'm setting you up, you're setting me up, because I get the feeling that Kokoro is just, he goes rogue, basically. And it's very interesting because he's got so much passion, so much drive, enthusiasm. He puts the foot in as well. So there's always something happening. But is it randomly happening, or is it something you're intentionally trying to make happen? And sometimes I feel those can be a bit contradictory when you see Martinez linking up with some guys and then Kokoro just going off doing his own thing. But if you manage to bring everybody on the same page and especially keep everybody fit, it can be, I think you can really go places with that team from an attacking perspective.
Yeah, and from Kokoro's perspective, so much kind of enthusiasm, as you said, combativeness really sparks everything around him. But it often happens in isolation. Also, so much mustache, we should say, because the mustache was missing in action for a while. But you mentioned going rogue, and he was already on a goal, that sublime cross that we've already spoken about from Tom Pearson. He's the one who buries it on the back post with his head. He grabs the ball when he wins the penalty. Do you have a problem with that? Because I don't know if it's really him going rogue or that was just striker's mentality. I'm already on a goal, so I'm going to strike this penalty and I'm going to get a brace out of it.
Well, if that's the logic, what in the name of God are they doing taking free kicks instead of Tom Pearce in that match?
Right. Yeah, like, that should have been his. Absolutely.
What's Corbo doing taking that free kick? It was Corbo, right? Mm-hmm. If I'm not mistaken. And then Bryce Duke just lofts the ball that comes back down with snow on it. It went so high when it was a free kick on the right. And to me, it was the perfect position.
That's the in-swinging one for a lefty.
That gives you a ton of problems if you're the goalkeeper. So if that's the logic, give it to the hot hand. Okay, but you have to make it across the board. Martinez missed the penalty the game previous against Orlando. Kokoro misses one. He scored two penalties in, was it in Chicago? I believe he did early in the match.
Match in Chicago.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what the setup is there. You just hope it stays healthy because we've seen massive split up in the past. It was Federico Higuain and Kai Kamara in Columbus against the Impact at the time. There was a big fight and Kai Kamara ended up getting traded just a few days later. I'm not comparing the two at all, but I'm just highlighting because it's a really good point that can be a contentious point between strikers. And hopefully everything is clear before and after the games in circumstances like these.
Yeah, I don't think it's ever any fun to see that play out on the pitch, on a public stage, like Chelsea, when Cole Palmer, I think, scored four, and it was his penalty to take, and Nicholas Jackson and some other players were right in there actually physically trying to wrest the ball away from one another, or Jermaine Defoe at TFC, right? I mean, that was an infamous one as well. But anyway, yeah. So I think we're good. I think we keep this
all done
and sharp today, and minimal drone talk. So
there you go.
Please about that. But
I'll have you on my radio show to fix that.
Oh boy.
See ya.
Can we just talk about the performances?
We will.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. Okay, listener, that's been CF Montreal 3 Questions with Ollie Brett and Amy Walsh. Cheers for listening.
Make sure to subscribe to Footy Prime wherever you get your podcasts and follow us on Twitter at @footy_prime and on Instagram at @footyprimeig and visit wearefootyprime.com and sign up for our newsletter. What up, Primers? JC here. Can't get enough of Footy Prime, the podcast? Why not head over to Footy Prime's YouTube? Head to youtube.com/footyprime for exclusive video content. Then make your way over to wearefootyprime.com for all things Footy Prime, including our official gear from Admiral and our One Ball Gin from Nickel 9 Distillery. And make sure to follow and subscribe across all platforms from Twitter to Instagram to Facebook to TikTok. Footy Prime has got you covered for all things footy. Thanks so much for listening and back to the show. Oh.